for the past 26 years or so, he's been in practice in neurosurgery, but recently, well, I should say recently, because time flies, huh? About 6 or 7 years ago?
About 5 years ago,
he retired to really focus on nutrition. And prior to that, you have nutrition practice as well. And since then, he's written a lot of good books, one being Exocytotoxins, which is a lot of the food additives that affect your brain function, and a real deep reading. And then there's this one that's Health and Nutrition Secrets that was given to me by my sweet patient Carol Woods over here. So you can browse just that if you'd like also. And his most recent work, which is Natural Strategies for the Cancer Patient. And he lectures both to lay public and also internationally to professional medical audiences also on a wide variety of nutritional subjects. This part I have to read. You have a lot of credentials. He's a member of the International Board of the World Natural Health Organization. He's a 2004 recipient of Integrity in Science Award granted by the Weston Price Foundation. And he serves on the editorial staff of the Journal of American Nutraceutical Association. He's the associate editor of the Journal of American Physicians and Surgeons, and he's the official journal, which is the official journal of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. He previously served in UMMC in Jackson as an assistant professor of neurosurgery, and is currently a visiting professor of biology at the Bellhaven College in Jackson, Mississippi. So we are very excited about what you have to say to us. Thank you so much, and we're going to turn it all over to you.
All right, if we could turn the lights down.
Yeah, I'll turn it down.
Can everybody hear me all right? I'm pretty loud. What we're going to talk about is the effect of vaccination on brain development. And that's my primary interest now. I spent a lot of time researching scientific articles on the effect of stimulating and overstimulating the immune system by vaccination and its effect on brain development. Now, what you need to realize is that the humans are unique in that the massive brain development occurs during the last trimester of pregnancy and the first 2 years after birth. So there's a tremendous period of brain development that goes on after a child is born for 2 years. This means that the pathways are forming, the cells are starting to mature, they're starting to migrate. There's a tremendous amount of activity in the brain, a period we call intense synaptogenesis. That doesn't stop at age 2 years. It continues all the way to age 27. So some of the most important parts of the brain, the prefrontal lobes, really begin or start to end their maturation as far into life as age 27. So during these adolescent years and even the teenage years, there's still a fair amount of synaptic development, brain development going on. So anything that disrupts that can cause some rather significant abnormalities. It can vary from intense, as we see in some of the autism cases, to rather minor things, behavioral problems, anger, depression, that can occur years later, even as an adult. So what happens in childhood can make a big difference as to what happens later. Now, of course, what we're concerned with here is autism. And one of the early observations was that autism, as described by Dr. Kenner, pretty much stayed the same throughout the entire period. Its incidence never changed. Then suddenly, in the 1980s, it began to go up. And the incidence of autism just exploded. It increased exponentially. And it was all over the United States. It was all over the developed countries. So every developed country in the world was seeing this astronomical increase in this serious neurodevelopmental disorder. Well, the medical profession looked at this a little different than some of the outlying medical minds that were looking at this, some of the scientists that were looking at this. Because the scientists looked at it and said, it's a little bit too much of a coincidence that this explosion of this disorder, after being stable for so long, for decades, occurred when there was a dramatic increase in the number of vaccines being given. So the vaccine number was around a dozen by the time it reached 1980s. And then suddenly we're beginning to see 20, 25, 26, 36. Huge numbers of vaccines were being piled onto children during this most rapid period of brain development, that first 2 years of life. So they concluded that it had to have something to do with these vaccines. Well, the medical profession generally's response was, well, that's possible, but we'll look for other things. And so, you know, my response is sort of like this. The medical profession was just clueless. Absolutely clueless. They tried to do everything they could to say, this is caused by something else. At first they said, well, it's a genetic disease, because they knew there were some genetic components to that Kenner described autism. But then the geneticist stepped forward and said, there is no such thing of a genetic disease exploding all over the world all at once. Said there's no example of that anywhere. So you can forget that this is a sudden appearance of a genetic disorder. There's no such thing. So they went to all kinds of contortions to say, well, there's some sort of biochemical abnormality, there's something else in the environment, it can't be the vaccine. So it was sort of the conclusion, it's anything but vaccines, was their idea. And that's what they pretty much adhere to since that time. So when we look at what happened, this is the new vaccine schedule. This is what children up to age 18 are expected to take throughout the early period of life, when the brain is undergoing its most rapid and intense development. They want them to get 40-something vaccines, 50-something vaccines by the time they're 18 years of age. Now, when we look at vaccination, we have to start at pregnancy now, because these geniuses have come up with the idea we need to vaccinate pregnant women against the flu, which is unbelievable in the face of what we know about neuroscience. Now, what we discovered many years ago was that when women are pregnant and they have a viral infection, the incidence of schizophrenia and autism goes up rather significantly. And it was first suspected, well, that's because the virus goes through the placenta, gets in the baby, and infects the baby's brain, and this can result in schizophrenia if it's late pregnancy and midterm autism. But what they discovered recently was, actually, that's not true. What happens is the mother has an immune reaction to this virus. She develops immune chemicals called cytokines in reaction to the virus. These immune chemicals pass through the placenta into the baby, and it's her own immune reaction that is damaging the brain of that baby. That leads to these disorders later in life. This was a major clue of what vaccines do to a developing brain. So now they are saying, well, women need to get this vaccine when they're pregnant. Now, while some cases occur of flu in pregnant women, it's not a lot. What they're trying to do is say, well, we'll go from just an occasional flu-infected pregnant woman to we will vaccinate every one of them and produce this immune reaction. So we'll dramatically increase the incidence of schizophrenia and autism by our program of vaccinating all women. Now, this is a release saying that some doctors are so confused, even pediatricians, that they're afraid to give the flu shot during pregnancy. And that it's completely safe because this physician said so. He didn't do any studies, you know, other than epidemiologic studies. And what an epidemiologic study is where you look at a large number of people and you see if there's any correlation between things. Now, in medicine, what you'll learn is that the easiest way to lie about something is do an epidemiologic study. It is considered the least reliable study you can do because it's so easy to manipulate. Statisticians, you read any book on statistics, it tells you the epidemiologic study is the weakest, most unreliable study you can do. These people, every time they defend vaccines, it is with an epidemiologic study because they know they can manipulate it to say what they want it to say. You remember when the Institute of Medicine came out and said, oh, there's no connection between vaccination and autism and no connection between thimerosal, mercury, and vaccines. We've done this huge epidemiologic study and proven it. There is no need to do any more research. You remember that? That was a manipulated study. Now, when the statisticians came back and looked at it and said, well, you didn't do this, you didn't do that, you cut off the period so that you didn't have to find cases, this is a totally flawed case and study, what do you think the media reported? The media reported what the Institute of Medicine said. They didn't report what the statisticians and the people who looked at the statistics and said it was a phony study said. And you'll see that repeatedly. So they're trying to convince the pediatricians, oh, it's just absolutely safe as spring water. Now, what is in a vaccine? Well, you'd be surprised to find out most doctors don't know. They don't have a clue what's in a vaccine. When you go to medical school, and I'm talking to my friends here who are medical students. When you go to medical school, there's a lot you don't learn. People think doctors are almost godlike geniuses who know everything about the human body. They know everything about disease. That is way off the mark. This is one of the things they don't know, and that's what's in a vaccine. Well, there's a lot of toxic things in vaccine. There's toxic metals like aluminum, and there's mercury in most of the vaccines, and all the flu vaccines still has mercury in it. The one they're injecting this pregnant women with has full dose of mercury in it. It has all kinds of phospholipids in it, which can produce severe brain reactions. It has all kinds of genetically modified bacteria in it. It has DNA fragments, RNA fragments. There's a lot of bad things that are in there and a lot of contaminants, which we'll talk about in just a minute. So you need to know, well, what are you injecting in these people? Well, they discovered that there's a lot of bacterial contaminants, viral contaminants, microplasmal contaminants in vaccines, even today. And one study looked at six major manufacturers of vaccines, many of which supply vaccines for the United States. And what they found was that 56%, up to 56% were contaminated with live organisms that were not intended to be in the vaccine. One of which was a pestivirus, which can cause spontaneous abortion in women and cause malformations in babies. They don't let the public know about this, and most pediatricians aren't even aware of it. And their viral fragments are very common in vaccines. I read an article in one of the very prestigious journals called Science, which is very difficult to get an article in Science. And it was talking about they looked at vaccines and found a very high percentage of them had DNA viral fragments in it. That means little pieces of DNA from various types of viruses. And so they asked the virologist, well, are these dangerous? Can they cause any problem? Could they insert themselves in human genes? And so the response of the virologist was, we don't think it'll cause any problem. Well, I don't want to have my child's life based on, I don't think it'll cause any problem. They didn't think thalidomide would make babies be born without arms. But thousands of them were born without arms. And they didn't think they would. So that is not a good scientific reasoning to say, well, I don't think these will cause any problems. Well, in fact, the scientific literature has shown that it causes problems. That these viral fragments can insert themselves in your genes. And they can induce disease. And they can induce brain inflammation that goes on for decades. So we know they cause problems. Well, this is a very scary thing. You know, there's been several stories about how major manufacturers of vaccines have been shut down because of contamination and because of poor manufacturing practices. You may have heard of that. Chiron was one of the big ones. Well, now most vaccines are being made in China. And the FDA, normally an American pharmaceutical company, pays them a little visit every 2 years. Goes in the company, goes through all the manufacturing process, examines everything. Well, guess what happens in Chinese plants that make vaccines? They visit every 13 years. And then they're not allowed in the plant. They can only speak to the communist officials who run the plant. And they tell them, yes, everything's okay. They write up their reports and go back home. That's where your vaccines are going to be made now. And are being made now. So you might keep that in mind when you talk about problems with pollution of vaccine. I lost my arrow for some reason. Okay, we're back on course. Now, we know there's a lot of complications with vaccines. And I was just talking to some of the mothers, and they said that the pediatrician told them, vaccines have never been known to cause seizures. I called the CDC, and they said that there's no connection between vaccines and seizures. Well, if a pediatrician tells you that, he got the wrong number. Because there are thousands of reports of seizures associated with vaccines. And they're reported every day to the CDC. Okay? So seizures is a major cause of problems in children. In autistic children, about 82% were found to have subclinical seizures. And they can cause behavioral problems, they can cause learning problems, they can cause loss of language. All of these things that we associate with autism can happen because of subclinical seizures. They're very difficult to detect. It takes a special method called magnetoencephalography. SIDS death, sudden infant death. Well, the study has shown that, in fact, 70% of cases of sudden infant death followed a DPT vaccine by 3 years. And I'll show you the mechanism by which that occurs. So we know the mechanism by which SIDS can occur when you get vaccinated. And we also know it can increase infections. For instance, it is on the CDC site that after a child receives a HIV vaccine, they should not be around other children for 3 weeks because the risk of them getting Haemophilus influenza meningitis actually goes up astronomically. Because HIV vaccine is immune suppressant. It suppresses their immunity. And I noticed that the media is gone now that we're talking. They got the clip. Now they go to the pediatrician and say it's all a bunch of nonsense. They haven't heard a word I've said. Just wanted to point that out. Danger of live virus vaccine. Now, if I was going to say no vaccine should ever be given, I would say a live virus vaccine. According to what we know, should never be given to any human being or your pets. We know that, for instance, that the MMR and HIV vaccines are powerfully immune-suppressing. After that vaccine, for weeks, the child's immune system is severely suppressed, just like HIV virus. You all know about HIV virus. It's not the only immune-suppressing virus. measles, mumps, rubella also suppress immunity very powerfully. Now, a study was done of people dying of old age. And what they were curious, was there any viruses in their brain from their childhood illnesses? And what they found is 20% of the brains had live measles virus in it. 45% of them had measles growing in their other organs and tissue. Live virus, measles that had been there all their life. So we know measles virus can get into the body, get into the brain, and live for a lifetime. Well, what happens when you inject every person in the United States with measles virus, along with the other immune-suppressing virus? Then the incidence of brain chronic infection with measles virus goes up astronomically. Well, the other thing they found was that this measles virus was terribly mutated. And when it mutates, it can cause diseases other than measles, like Crohn's disease, middle ear defect, all sorts of things. We also know there's a strong association of asthma, childhood diabetes, autoimmune disorders, neurological disorders, and the use of live vaccines. This is proven. This isn't speculation. This is ignored. What about the live polio virus? How many here know that after 1970, every case of polio was caused by the vaccine itself? And you may know about, they went to Africa and Nigeria, the World Health Organization, and they mass inoculated people with the live polio virus and produced an epidemic of polio. And the parents and the children. There was hardly any cases of polio in Nigeria until they started the program. And then they were vaccinating people who were HIV positive with the live polio vaccine. And when the CDC was asked, is that safe to do? They said, it's a death sentence. You should never vaccinate anybody with HIV positive with the polio virus. Yet they were doing it on a mass scale. Now the people in Africa and Nigeria rioted. The mothers refused to have their children vaccinated. So what did the World Health Organization do? They told all the neighboring countries, you know, when your children start getting polio and paralyzed, it's Nigeria's fault because they won't vaccinate their children. And I read an article in the World Health Organization magazine saying every case was caused by the vaccine. They even have a name for it, vaccine-related polio. So this is a case of what was happening. Now, they asked the CDC, well, do you use the live virus in the United States? Said, oh, no. It causes polio. Said, we use the kill vaccine in the United States. We just ship it over to Africa and give it to them. And India. So these are the people you're dealing with. Now, we also know that both the killed and the live polio vaccine was heavily contaminated with a virus called SV40, which is a carcinogenic virus. It causes cancer. Well, it was discovered at the time that Sabin was promoting his vaccine and the government was promoting the vaccine. They discovered that it was contaminated with SV40. So their cover story was, well, we've looked at it, and this is not known to be a carcinogenic virus in humans. They knew any virus could potentially cause cancer. So they said, well, we don't have any evidence that it does. Well, there's a Dr. Bernice Eddy who worked for the National Institutes of Health who studied it. And she proved beyond any question that it is a carcinogenic virus, that it produces cancer. Well, now they have linked it to a great number of childhood brain tumors, mesothelioma, and other cancers. They type the tumors and find the virus in it. And by using special techniques, they could prove that it's not just a contaminant virus, it actually caused the cancer itself. So this is a case of large public trust being violated by people who said, oh, we got a terrible epidemic of polio. We need to save lives. We're going to vaccinate everybody for polio. And that was the result. Well, I lived and grew up in Monroe, Louisiana, which is listed as one of the highest incidences of polio in the United States in the 1950s. I remember one classmate who had polio. So it wasn't like half the town was paralyzed and in iron lungs, but they would make you think that that was the case. And we'll see really what caused the polio paralysis to change anyway. These are SB40 tainted polio vaccine contamination zone. Mississippi had none. So if you grew up in Mississippi, you're safe. Louisiana is low. These other states, very high SB40 contamination. So what did the government do to prove that SB40 didn't cause any problem? Yes, an epidemiological study. As always. Now, this is Boyd Haley. Some of you have heard of him. Boyd Haley is a biochemist, professor of chemistry, head of the department at the University of Kentucky. And he does a lot of research in thimerosal toxicity, mercury toxicity in the brain. And I've spent time talking with him, and we discuss our different theories and speak at the same meetings. I have a little bit different idea than he has about why mercury is toxic, but he's done a lot to show what it does to the brain. But it's much more toxic than even he knows. The thimerosal, we know, is made of ethyl mercury. And it is infinitely more toxic than methyl mercury. Methyl mercury was found in fish. Now, it's interesting that EPA puts out warnings, do not eat these fish, swordfish, tuna, tilefish, because the mercury levels are so high, they endanger the adult life, pregnant women, and especially children don't feed these fish. At the very same time, they take a form of mercury that is infinitely more toxic and say, oh, but it's okay to inject massive amounts in your little bitty child. Now, that does not have good reasoning and logic behind it. And the reason that ethyl mercury is so much more toxic is because it changes to ionic mercury in the brain and is extremely difficult to remove. And it's the ionic mercury that actually does the harm. We know that mercury poisons a great number of enzymes inside of tissues. Every tissue in your body, but particularly the brain, because the brain is rapidly forming during the period that they're injecting this massive amount of mercury. Mercury is known to induce autoimmunity. When you look at autistic kids, there's a high incidence of autoimmunity and antibodies against brain, against neurons. Mercury will do that in very small doses. Mercury activates the brain's immune system in very small doses. And it produces chronic brain inflammation in very small doses. The children were getting massive doses. And if you're if you're following the CDC recommendation, the recommendation of the American Academy of Pediatrics, what that means is you're going to give your child a flu shot from age 6 months to age 18 months, and then you're going to do it every year thereafter. You're going to inject this child with mercury again. So they take the mercury out of the childhood vaccines and they put them in the flu vaccines, and now you've got to give them the flu vaccine. Well, why did they do that? Because they knew if you suddenly get rid of the mercury, something's going to change. Something's going to get better. So let's sneak the mercury back in so nothing will change drastically. Mercury severely impairs energy production by the brain. That's proven. That's not speculation. It's been known for a long time. During the hearings before Congress, they asked the head of the CDC, Dr. Gerbening, how many articles have been published on the safety of, on the toxicity of methyl mercury? And she said, about 2,000. She said, how many articles have been written on the safety of ethyl mercury? And she mumbled something. And he said, I'm sorry, I can't hear you. And she said, none. He says, you mean for 70 years, you've been adding mercury to vaccines, and now in huge doses, and you've never done a study to see if it's toxic to children's brains? To sit back? Well, they've done them now, and it's extremely toxic. As I said, much more than what's in fish. Now, this is a flu shot vaccine with its mercury in it. This is present day. Well, if you look at different A, look at the fetus. This is the baby. A baby's dose of mercury is 250 times higher than is acceptable for a full-grown adult, according to the Environmental Protection Agency. 250 times higher. Yet, they're trying to convince people with functioning brains that that's okay. And at 6 months, it's 16.2 times higher than for a full-grown adult. Now, you may remember the Merck Pharmaceutical Company had a little scandal when the head of their vaccine division sent a little memo to the president of the company and said, hey, I've been calculating mercury doses, and we're giving children about 80 times the dose for a full-grown adult. And so the memo went in a little file cabinet that always seemed to end up. And no action was taken. In fact, he increased the number of mercury-containing vaccines after the memo. Well, a court got his records, looked at it, and said, you were told by the head of your vaccine division that you were giving 80 times the dose for a full-grown adult. And yet you increased it to 100 times. So this is the kind of nonsense that's going on. And have physicians and responsible physicians say, oh, that's perfectly safe, because the Institute of Phony Medicine said it's okay. It's nonsense. Now, what the CDC does is they don't really follow children very long after a vaccination, about 2 weeks to a month at the most. That way, they can deny a lot of cases, because we know experimentally you can get complications weeks, months, years after a vaccine. Seizures can appear a year later. So by just limiting your study, that cuts out a lot of numbers in your complication list. And the studies have shown that pediatricians report vaccine reactions only about 20% of the time. So 80%, there's not even ending up in the government statistics. Well, if you look at the government statistics, it's tens of thousands of reactions are being reported every year. And that's only 20% of them if we take that figure. So most of them never get reported. And your pediatrician, as I've heard tonight from the mothers, vaccine, I don't think that had anything to do with your child's seizure. Well, the science says something radically different. And of course, they expanded. Now they want little babies vaccinated for flu. They want mom vaccinated for flu when she's pregnant. And then they want you vaccinated all the way through life for flu vaccine. And this is the company that makes most of the flu vaccine for the United States. The Chiron company was closed down because of poor manufacturing, unsafe conditions, contaminated vaccines. Well, right after this, they're back churning out flu vaccines. And that's where your flu vaccines come from right now, that we're going to inject these children with. And this is the man who's doing all that he can to protect them. His family is very close to the Merck family. They live next door. They have a house down in Florida. They live next door to each other. And he has led the call to protect the vaccine manufacturers against lawsuits. So they passed a law that, well, you can't really sue a pharmaceutical company over a vaccine complication. You have to go to this little committee. They'll review it and see if it's justifiable. Of course, it's a stacked committee. So let's look at what happens with multiple vaccinations when you vaccinate a kid too many times. Is that something our science says is safe? Well, it all goes back to the brain's immune system. The brain has its own separate immune system. It's called a microglia cell. And your brain is filled with them. And normally they're in a resting state. We call ramified, which means they're sleeping. Now when they're in this kind of a sleeping state, they're actually helping protect the brain cells. But they can be activated very easily. Almost anything will activate them. A blow to the head, a virus, a bacteria, a toxin, exposure to mercury. All these things will rapidly activate microglia in the brain. When that happens, we call that a primed microglia. And what that means is it kind of goes into overdrive. It's hyped up, ready to go. It says, something has attacked my brain, and I'm here to protect it. I'm revved up, ready to go. Show me who I need to kill. So that's what happens, let's say, when mom gets her flu vaccine. The child's microglia are primed. Now let's say the child is born and then develops an infection. Then that prime microglia goes into super overdrive. It is pouring out toxic chemicals because it thinks the brain has been invaded. Now normally when you get an infection anywhere in your body, this system quickly shuts off when the infection is taken care of. But vaccines don't allow it to shut off. It just stays turned on for months, years, decades. There's an article that appeared in the journal Annals of Neurology not long ago, the Vargas study, you may have heard of it. But for the first time, they looked at children's brains who had autism. And they wanted to see, is there any evidence of immune overactivation in these children's brains? And what they found was, there was extensive microglial activation throughout the entire brain of this child. Well, they didn't just look at children with autism. They even looked at people who were age 45 who had autism all this time. And what they found is the microglia were intensely activated the entire time, from age 3 to age 45. Something that's very unusual. That's not what's supposed to happen in the brain, but it is. Now, I had written an article three years before that article appeared, in which I proposed that autism's central mechanism was microglial activation. And the people, some of the people I knew and some of the big organizations, the doctors kind of laughed at it and thought I was crazy. And then the Vargas study comes out and proves it. Well, now we know microglial activation is in the center of this event that's going on in the brain in the autistic child. And that vaccination, once again, becomes the chief culprit, because when you activate that microglia and produce that prime state, and then you vaccinate again a month later or 2 months later, it's in overdrive. And it gets stuck. And it will not turn off. Now, when you make vaccines, you put what's called adjuvants in them. What the adjuvant's supposed to do is boost the vaccine's immune reacting ability. So it really makes your immune system act real intense to try to protect you against whatever organism it is. Well, it also activates the brain's microglia at the same time. So every time you're vaccinated, your brain turns on this inflammatory process. We know that all these contaminants, the viral mycoplasma, the live viruses from the MMR vaccine, even viral bacterial fragments, protein additives, polysaccharide, MSG, all those things activate microglia. One of the most powerful substances to activate microglia is ethylmercury, thimerosal. It will do it in what's called nanomolar concentration. That is less than a millionth of a mole. It's extremely small concentration. All right, let's look at what happens to the typical child. This is your children. Well, at pregnancy, mom gets a flu shot. What happens to the baby's microglia? They're primed. They're turned on. Then at birth, baby gets a hepatitis B vaccine. Okay? That's just a short time later. These prime microglia overreact. They're pouring out toxic chemicals. Then 2 months later, child gets 6 vaccines all at once. Now, when these clowns get on TV and say, oh, hey, the new vaccines have very mild adjuvants in it, and it's 200 times weaker than it used to be, what they don't manage to say is, well, you're not giving one adjuvant, you're giving 6. You've piled on 6 powerful adjuvants. You've got 6 doses of aluminum. You've got 6 doses of mercury in the older vaccines. You've got 6 doses of bacterial contaminants, DNA fragments, given to this child all at once, and the child already has the microglia in overdrive. Now, what the studies show is that when you do that, it's pouring out these noxious chemicals, and it starts killing off the connections between brain cells. And then the pathways quit forming correctly. All these things are interfered with. 2 months later, child gets 5 vaccines at once. 2 months later, gets 7 vaccines at once. And then 1 year later, gets 6 vaccines at once. So by the time this child is 1 year of age, he's gotten 26 vaccines. And they try to convince someone who knows about microglial activation in the brain that that's safe. Well, I'm not that stupid. I have researched this. It's in the scientific literature. The neuroscientists know this effect. And yet, pediatricians, I'll guarantee you, have never heard of any of this. They wouldn't know what I was talking about.
Have
what?
Offered to do services for
the pediatric. I would be glad to. If they were open-minded and they wanted to know, I'll teach them. Now, this is what happens experimentally when you do this in an animal. When you reproduce, when you take an animal and you give them a vaccine the way you're giving people. What they found was that when you do that, it increases the inflammatory chemicals in the brain called cytokines. The level goes up real high, so the brain becomes inflamed. And they find that if you do it in animals, they lose interest in physical and social environment. And you find they have decreased food intake. And they have altered thinking ability. They have initially a hypersensitive reaction to pain, which is like when your child is first vaccinated, you remember the screaming cry, and they cry and scream for days or weeks, and the pediatrician said, oh, it's just because it's sore. It's nonsense. It's called an encephalitic cry. Well, they become initially hypersensitive to pain, and then they become almost insensitive to pain. And that's what we see in autistic children. A lot of times they become insensitive to pain. They fatigue easy. There's decreased reaction to rewards. Uncontrolled reaction to frustration, marked irritability, vacant staring spell, repetitive behavior, loss of the theory of mind. What does that sound like? Sound like autism to me. And yet, this is done repeatedly in the laboratory. This is written about extensively in neuroscience. But to the pediatrician, he's never heard of any of this. The American Academy of Pediatrics didn't tell him that. This is an activated microglia in the brain, just so you can see what it looks like. It's what we call the angry cell. This is a scan. It's a microglial, activated microglial scan. This is a different condition. This is Alzheimer's disease, but it's the same thing happens in the child that's vaccinated. This is a healthy control of the same age. This is someone with Alzheimer's. You see, there's intense microglial activation. So it's the same process in the Alzheimer's patient that's occurring in this little baby, but it's just occurring earlier and having somewhat of a different reaction because the brain is different. Now, what happens when a microglia gets activated? Well, it starts secreting a lot of nasty things. It secretes reactive oxygen nitrogen species, what we call free radicals. in large amounts. It had lipid peroxidation products. In other words, it started to oxidize the lipids in the brain. The brain has one of the highest lipid contents of any organ. And it secretes something called excitotoxins. This is what I wrote my first book about, excitotoxins. Glutamate, aspartate, quinolinic acid. So when the brain is disturbed, when its immune system is activated, it's pouring out a great number of very toxic chemicals. If it doesn't shut that off, then it starts killing brain cells. It starts breaking up these connections that should occur in the brain. This just shows you how they're related. This is the nerve cell. This is the microglia. And it can secrete these chemicals and very easily damage that nerve cell. And we know there's a great number of things that can activate these microglia. Mercury, aluminum, both of which are in vaccines. Almost all vaccines have aluminum. Fluoride can activate it. MSG can activate it. MSG is in a lot of vaccines. The vaccination itself can. Candida infection. You may have heard about the connection between Candida and autism. Well, if they get a Candida infection, their microglia prime, the Candida primes it even worse. Other gut infections, contaminants in the vaccine, food intolerance. So food intolerance is soy, milk, gluten, gliadin. They do the same thing. Once those microglia are turned on, if you have a gluten sensitivity, and that gluten triggers an immune reaction in your body, then that child gets an accelerated inflammation of the brain, and that's why they get worse when they eat these foods. Now, I've created a new name for this. I call it immunoexcitotoxicity. And that's what it is. We now know that when all of these events happen, there's immune receptors in brain cells and there's glutamate receptors. And that when these two receptors are activated at the same time, you get rapid destruction of all sorts of cells and connections and dendrites and synapses. So it's a complex process far beyond what I can explain to you, but I could explain to you, but you'd probably fall asleep. It is a very complex process, but just to show you that's what's happening. And as I said, the glutamate plays a major role in how the brain forms. These cells have to migrate to get to where they're going. Glutamate's what controls that. If there's too much glutamate, it quits moving. So the cells are abnormally formed and they're abnormally situated. Also, the maturation of the cell. So if the cell becomes different types of cells in the brain, depends on glutamate again. And it depends on the cytokines, these immune cytokines. So if you disrupt that with vaccination, where you're increasing the glutamate level in the brain, and you're increasing the cytokines in the brain, you're disrupting this entire developmental brain process. That's just basic neuroscience. The brain is a very complex organ. It's the most complex thing in all the universe. We have no clue as to most of the mysteries of the brain. Yet they treat it as if, well, it's just a piece of meat in your head and it'll be all right if we vaccinate them 1,000 times. Well, in autism, the main effect is in the frontal lobe, temporal lobe, and the cerebellum and the parietal lobe. That's where most of the events occur. And when you look at the microglial activation, the most intense is in the cerebellum and the frontal lobe, the two areas that explain all the symptoms in autism. So it's a microglial activation disorder. This is the limbic system of the brain. This is the one that has to do with behavior, motivation, connecting the different systems for language and language function, social interaction. And this is where a lot of the disorder occurs in autism. This is where a lot of the microglial activation is occurring. And we know that. And we can reproduce it in animals by doing the same thing. So what the vaccine people do is they try to convince you, oh, this is safe. It's been carefully studied. All these scare stories you've heard just aren't true. Come on and let me stick your child with these six or seven vaccines. because it will save their life. And the greatest myth of all, historical myth, is that vaccines is what got rid of the terrible epidemics in the United States and in the Western world. And it saved the Western world from mass death. And as my friend here was telling me, the vaccine representative told him, oh, go out in the graveyard and look at the tombstones and all the little children in the 1800s that died of these diseases. And they're not there now. Well, when they look back at the history of these diseases, they found, for instance, polio death rate had dropped dramatically before the vaccine was ever introduced. And the rate of decline did not change with the vaccine. In other words, something else was eradicating polio and not necessarily the vaccine. Not to deny that it had no effect or any effect. The measles vaccine death rate fell 90% before any vaccine program was ever created. So most of the children had been saved by something other than a vaccine. The vaccine really did very little to change the death rate of measles. And you know, they don't want to know this history, and they don't want the general public to know. Now, what was it that was happening that made these death rates of these diseases like pertussis and polio and measles fall so dramatically? Well, the health authorities now look at it and said better nutrition. Clean water, better public health. That's exactly what it is. And they looked all over the world. They found the same thing. As the sanitation improved, as the diets improved, as vegetables and refrigeration allowed them to bring vegetables into cities, death rates were plummeting. And if you look at every epidemic in the history of the world, it always followed on the tale of two things, war and famine. If you look at the 1917 pandemic of flu that killed millions, it followed in the tales of World War I. In fact, the flu was occurring in the beginning and hardly anyone was getting really sick and most people had recovered. And then the war got more intense, there was more famine, and the flu came back, and then that's when elderly people started dying. So it's poor nutrition that increases the death rate. Now, in the world today, when you look at the United States, and there's still periods when measles will go through a community, we see maybe one or two children die. 10 may die at the most. Almost all those children have chronic diseases. Almost all of them have some kind of chronic disease that impairs their immune system. So all the other kids in the community don't die from the measles. Now, so what do the authorities do to scare people? Is it, look over in Africa. Measles goes through there and kills millions. Well, there's high levels of parasitic infection. There's malnutrition. There's war. There's poor sanitation. But they love these examples. They never say, oh, look at Wisconsin. Oh, look at New Jersey. They say, look at Africa. Look at India. China. Because they know they can find the cases there because these conditions exist. And I'll share a little secret with you. The brilliant vaccinologist decided one day, we're going to go and vaccinate villages in Africa and save them from the scourge of these diseases. So they all packed up their little vaccines, went there and started vaccinating kids. Guess what? Over 30 to as high as 50% died from the vaccine. And they were shocked. And then they went down to the Aborigine in Australia, and they did the same thing. Vaccinated them, 30 to 50% died. From the vaccine, within days of the vaccine. And so then they figured out, well, it's because the kids are malnutritious. If we give them zinc and vitamin A, they stop dying. Now, does anyone tell children or mothers in the United States, make sure your children have good nutrition or taking a multiple vitamin before they ever get vaccinated? Because, surprise of all surprise, we have children in the United States that are zinc deficient and vitamin A deficient. And if they'll vaccinate them, and they'll kill them.
especially if you have Tylenol, which is a depressant.
Well, we'll get into that in just a minute. That's an interesting scandal there.
A lot of them are scaring people and telling them not to give their children vitamin A because of the toxicity.
Which is sheer nonsense. Sheer nonsense. Now, polio cases. Polio had been around forever. It was a benign disease. And if there's a book out, Olitsky's book on polio, an American story. It's a great book. It's the history of polio in the United States. And he shows that polio cases of paralysis were almost unknown. And had been extremely low. And suddenly, for some reason, the virus changed and started producing paralysis in larger numbers of people. Still, most cases were very mild. Most people got the polio virus, and they were just like a summer flu, and in a few days they were well. Well, what happened was they found out when they started vaccinating for pertussis, the DPT vaccine, is when the number of cases of polio skyrocketed. And that's because when you mess with the immune system and alter the function of the immune system, you can make other diseases more virulent. This is known in virology. It's easy to make viruses more virulent. Just make the body produce more free radicals and the virus will change. And that's what they did. They were vaccinating mass numbers of children for DPT and suddenly polio became a serious disease. So they created a disease and then they claimed that they destroyed it. Look at the annual death rates of asthma, malnutrition, and flu. Asthma far exceeds the flu death. And you notice these numbers. Look at the numbers of people actually dying from flu. See these numbers? What do they tell you every year? On their radio, 36,000 people die of the flu every year. That is sheer nonsense. If it did, it means that as many people are dying every year as died in one of the worst flu epidemics in the United States. And when you look on their site, you don't find 36,000 in their figures. It's these numbers. So they purposely inflated the number to scare the daylights out of you. So you grab your child, go run down and vaccinate them. It's all based on fear and smoke and mirrors. Well, look at influenza deaths in children under 5 years of age. This is for the entire United States, people. 25 children, 19 in 2000, 13 in year 2001. Then they started giving the flu vaccine to children. Suddenly it jumped up to 90 deaths. Another case of a vaccine increasing dramatically the deaths from a previously benign disorder. It did not kill that many people. What about effectiveness of the flu vaccine? Well, when they looked at older than 2 years of age, with the live influenza vaccine, it was 33% effective. When they looked at the inactivated vaccine, it was 36% effective. Now, when they looked at children under 2 years of age, it was zero effective. Now, they're saying, all parents, your child 6 months of age, I think now is 23 months of age, needs a flu vaccine every year. And yet they know that this study showed it did not prevent flu at all. And there's no evidence it prevents the death of any child who gets the flu. And they know that. Well, what do doctors do? Studies show that 70% of doctors and nurses refuse to take the flu shot. Because when I sit in the doctor's lounge talking to my friends and fellow physicians, they all know it doesn't work. It rarely protects you against flu. And in fact, a lot of people, it makes sick. What about healthcare workers? Well, most of them refuse to take it. But religiously, this doctor that won't take it himself tells everyone else, oh, you got to get your flu shot. Bring your kids in, got to get the flu shot. And you should say, doctor, did you get yours? Have all your children been vaccinated, doctor? Could I see the proof that they were vaccinated? If you show me the proof that you vaccinated all your children and your wife and you, I'll consider it. Tetanus case. Tetanus is the most ridiculous disease to vaccinate against. The incidence of tetanus deaths in the United States, 5, 1, 4, 7. This is in the entire United States, almost 300 million people. Now, tetanus is an anaerobic organism. That means it cannot live in the presence of oxygen. Now, when I was growing up, we all knew if you want to prevent tetanus, put hydrogen peroxide on it. So you get a wound, put hydrogen peroxide on it. It instantly kills any tetanus germs. You will not get tetanus. Now, tetanus comes from manure. And so it is pets or animals or cows. Most cases of tetanus in the old days, if they go back to, occurred in farmers who got cut on barbed wire because the cows rubbed up against the barbed wire and got the feces on the barbed wire, and that's how they got tetanus. Even then, tetanus was rare. Now, when I was coming up, we took the tetanus shot, and we were told it was lifetime immunity. None of us got another shot. Well, guess what happened to the incidence of tetanus? It didn't change. Yet there were millions of us, tens of millions of us, who were walking around with no protection from that vaccine, and nobody got tetanus. Now, they have mothers convinced now, if you don't get a tetanus every time Billy scratches himself, he's going to get tetanus and die. It's a horrible disease. I've seen it. Well, I can guarantee you, 99% of physicians in this country have never seen a case of tetanus. They say they have, they'll have to be 95 years old. And tetanus is listed as one of the most dangerous of the vaccines, associated with the most complications. That and the hepatitis B. Diphtheria cases and deaths. Same story all over again. But they have convinced that it's wiping out the nation. Now, we had all of these shots, you know, the shots for preventing diphtheria, pertussis. Well, guess what? Those shots didn't last 4 years. So most of us went with no protection all our lives, thinking we were protected. None of us got pertussis. Well, you can't get in college now unless you make sure you have proven you've had your pertussis. Because if you go to college and you haven't had your little pertussis shot, you're going to wipe out the university. And they have everybody convinced of this nonsense. Even doctors who are supposed to be intelligent. Adverse reaction to the MMR vaccine. These are all the things. Death, brain damage, neurologic damage, immune system damage, autism. All these things are associated with it. It's all in the Bayer's information collected by the government dutifully and never acted on. Now, you talked about the Tylenol. A number of studies have found that if you give a fever reducer when a child has a vaccine, the death rate goes up enormously. We can see when the child did not have fever reduction, only 7% died. When you gave them Tylenol or something else to lower their fever, 35% died. So just lowering their temperature dramatically increases the death rate. Well, when these little epidemics, these little outbreaks happen in the cities and 4 or 5 kids die of the measles, who asked, were they on Tylenol, doctor? Maybe the Tylenol killed them. See, no one asked those questions. And so they say, oh, it was the measles, and this means we got to try twice as hard to get everybody vaccinated. We really need to work to convince these ignorant mothers to vaccinate their children. Well, here's the SIDS thing again. Pertussis shot within 8 days. Look how high the respiratory stress measures go up. And they're still denying it has anything to do with vaccines. Yet 70% of cases follow the DPT shot within 3 weeks. And this mechanism I showed you, the highest concentration of microglia in the brain is in the part of the brain that controls respiration. So when you vaccinate the kid, the microglia are activated to secreting this immunoexcitotoxic combination in the children who have immature developed respiratory systems. It kills them. That's not hard to understand. You know, it's in the scientific literature, but they have trouble reading that. You would think it was written in Martian or something. Measles vaccine, inflammatory bowel disease. Look at the dramatic increase in ulcerative colitis in those who've had the MMR vaccine and in Crohn's disease. That's again a case of a live virus that mutates and causes a new disease. That is a well-known phenomenon in virology. Now here we go with the measles outbreak. These are different times in which there's been an outbreak of measles. In 1984, had an outbreak of measles. 58% of the children were fully vaccinated. They got the measles. 1985, 99% of the kids that got the measles had been vaccinated. 1986, 96% were vaccinated, on and on and on. So we see in most cases, the kids who get the measles were fully vaccinated. So what it's showing is the vaccine, in many, many cases, does not protect. It's a false assurance. This is a big secret that most of these vaccine people don't want you to know, is that when you look at the statistics in the medical literature, it says, well, there's a high failure rate of these vaccines. They don't protect. And yet they give you the impression, you get this shot, your little child is protected 100% from now on. They know the vaccine, number one, won't last 4 years. And number two, they know at least a third of kids will get no protection from the vaccination. Rubella vaccine and arthritis. This is interesting. 55% of vaccinated women developed arthritis. Now this is to prevent rubella syndrome in the child, developmental abnormality. But over half of the women who were vaccinated developed significant arthritis. Well, again, what did the doctor do? Doctors in general, 78% refused to take the vaccine. When they asked obstetricians, the main one who was encouraging women to take the vaccine, 91% refused to take it. What did they give as their reason for refusing to take it? It causes arthritis. I need my hands. What, no one else needs hands? Well, doctor, I'm going to do like you. I'm going to refuse. Just like the flu vaccine. You won't take it, doctor. Why are you forcing me? Why does the law force me to take it? And my child to take it? So we got to throw in an ounce of common sense here. We also know that an effective vaccine can do something else. It can shift the age group of which that disease affects you. That can be very dangerous. Some diseases, some viruses, like mumps, if you get it early in life, it causes a very minor disease. If you get it later in life, it can cause major disease. These vaccines are shifting the disease to an older age group, making the virus more dangerous, more likely to cause major problems. Hepatitis B vaccine. This is the most idiotic vaccine ever. The idea that you would take a newborn baby and say, we need to get a hepatitis B in this baby. And then, you know, if you set the doctor down and say, doctor, what's the incidence of hepatitis B in a newborn baby? Well, you know, you see this and it's just hard. No, what's the incidence, doctor? What are the chances of that baby getting it? Well, if the mom's a drug addict, or the mom's had a blood transfusion, or if the mom uses, has a homosexual life mate, it's pretty high. Well, I'm a good Christian person, and I haven't had a transfusion, and I don't do these things, so why should I vaccinate my child? Well, because the state legislature said, we're going to vaccinate everybody. You see? And then you say, well, what are the complications of giving hepatitis B to anyone? Well, that's a newborn baby. Oh, there's a few things can happen. Along with tetanus, it is one of the two most dangerous of the vaccines. And the reaction in a newborn baby immunologically is totally different than in any other age. That's in the medical literature. It produces an immune reaction in the child that shifts them to an immune deficient state that lasts over a year. Which means they get more diseases. So they get sicker and then they say, see, we need more vaccine. It's just, you know, they create diseases and then they say, hey, look, we just invented a vaccine for that. All right, let's look at the hepatitis B and the incidence of actual disease. Well, these are serious complications from the vaccine. This is the actual number of people who contracted the disease and had a reaction. So the vaccine was producing many times more serious, deadly reactions in people than the disease itself. Hepatitis B in 90% of the people is a minor disorder. Cleared very rapidly, people barely get sick, some never even know they got sick. It's only a small percentage, less than 10%, who develop chronic active hepatitis. The reason for the vaccine. But they don't want you to know that. Now look at the hepatitis B cases by age group. 0 to 4, that is from birth to 4, in the entire United States, they had 5 cases. For this, we vaccinate 100 million children. Well, who are these 5 cases? Well, their mothers who had HIV, their mothers who used drugs, their mothers who had a blood transfusion, mothers who had a homosexual mate. They're not most mothers. And it's easy to find out who's at risk. Well, look at age 5 to 14. Still, there's only 11 cases. Look at age 15 to 24. Well, now you're starting to accumulate some cases. 25 to 64 is where most of the cases were. You know, those are drug users. Those are HIV infected. Those are people getting blood transfusions. So it's not even a risk until age 20 or 18 at the most. So why are you vaccinating children down here? Well, it used to be on the CDC site. They would tell you. It said, we are vaccinating the newborns because we're afraid if they get to 18 and above, we won't be able to capture them. So if we vaccinate them as soon as they're born and they can't get out of the hospital, then we vaccinate everybody. Well, you know what the idiocy of that is? And, of course, any idiot would have known that. The vaccine protection doesn't last. So they studied it and found out, well, it's not even lasting 4 to 5 years. So they never get to the high-risk group, and the vaccine is already no good. So, you know what their response was? We'll vaccinate them every 2 years till they get there. This is a brilliant thinking. Well, pharmaceutical companies love it. Look how many vaccines we're going to sell now. Not just 100 million at birth. Now every year we're going to do it. And then if we can trick those idiots in the state houses and the federal government to mandate it at the end of a gun or a bayonet, wow, we're going to make the money. And it's not real hard to convince them to stay. Now look at Hib's meningitis. Hib's meningitis is bad. I've treated a number of these cases. Look what happened in Japan. Japan stopped giving the DPT vaccine because of the severe problem with seizures and neurological damage. When they stopped vaccinating children for DPT, the incidence of Hib dropped precipitously. Which means, when you look back on it, the DPT was altering the immunity and making kids more susceptible to getting Hib. So the Hib epidemic was caused by the previous vaccine. So their answer is, let's give even more vaccines. Well, immunologists are secretly talking among themselves saying, I think we got a problem. We're vaccinating so much, we're destroying the immune system of children. And we're really going to have a big problem when this hits. And we find out that most of the population has very little immunity to resisting. That's the big secret. Chickenpox vaccine. My infectious disease friends fall over laughing. They say, I cannot believe some idiot made a chickenpox vaccine. It's the most benign viral disease you'll see. But oh, you would think it is wiping out the nation. When I grew up, all of us had chickenpox. My kids had chickenpox. Everybody had chickenpox. I never saw one major complication in any of my classmates. None of my classmates died from any childhood disease. But if you watch the news, you would think that in 1950, the streets were piled high with dead bodies. The hospitals were filled to the roof with sick children dying of measles, mumps, and pertussis. It's a lie. When I lectured to the biology students at Bellhaven, they were all young, and I told them, I said, do you realize that none of these vaccines existed when I was a kid? I said, what they're selling you is a lie. And they know it, because what they know is you're stuck in your generation and you're not looking back at history and saying, that didn't occur. Now, here's another effect of vaccines, the pneumococcal vaccine, the latest genius idea of the vaccine idiots. They said, well, old people are dying of pneumococcal pneumonia. We need a vaccine for it. Well, number one, I would wager that the number one problem with pneumococcal pneumonia being a problem is the flu vaccine. Remember I said the mercury in the flu vaccine is powerfully immune suppressing? They have old people taking the flu vaccine every year, suppressing their immunity, and then they get pneumococcal pneumonia. Surprise of all surprise. And then they put out all the reports, don't take vitamins, don't worry about fruits and vegetables, eat your junk food, and their immune system goes down. Well, I can assure you that the literature shows the number one cause for immune depression in older people is nutrition. And that if you give them the carotenoids like beta-carotene, alpha-carotene, xanthine, lycopene, their immunity goes up to what it was when they were 20. It's a nutritional deficiency. Now, if you vaccinate somebody who has immune dysfunction, what happens? Well, number one, they're not protected against the disease for which you vaccinated them. And number two is they're more likely to develop an autoimmune disease. That's well known. So the other thing that happens with diseases like this, well, pneumococcus has 90 different strains of organisms. The vaccine only covers 7 strains. Well, in the field of microbiology, we know when you create vaccines against just 7 strains, the bacteria, the leaves become pathogenic. Well, then more people start dying of pneumonia. And they say, oh, we got a new vaccine. We just invented to cover some more strain. And it's unending. It's unending. Herd immunity. How many of you have heard of herd immunity? This is their favorite. We have to protect society by vaccinating the majority of people. And by vaccinating most people, that keeps the epidemics from going through society. There's some truth to that. It's not a total lie. But here's the deception. Number one is you never get to the percentage of fully immunized people that they claim. In 1933, the idea of herd immunity appeared. They said if you vaccinate and immunize 68% of the population, you can prevent epidemics. Then in the 1970s, it rose to 91%, and then, 80%, and in the 90s it went to 90%, and now they're saying, well, to get herd immunity, you've got to vaccinate 99% of the population. So the numbers keep going up, and as the numbers go up, the number of vaccines sold go up. Now, is herd immunity real? As I said, when I was growing up, there were a handful of vaccines. We had diphtheria, pertussis, tetanus, smallpox. That was it. Now, we were told that was lifelong immunity. Now they found out, actually, it didn't last 5 years, 10 at the most. So that meant for people my age, for most of my age, I have had no protection from my vaccines. None. And that accounts for everybody over age 50 in the United States. Well, friends, that's the largest segment of American population. And what that means, it's not even close to half of the population is even being vaccinated. And remember, only about 30% of people who are vaccinated actually get immune protection. So it's far less than that. Maybe a third of the nation is immunized by these vaccines. The mass of people are not immunized, and there's been no mass epidemics, no mass death. The hospitals aren't flowing and falling out of the window with people dying of these old childhood diseases, like they would make you think if we don't reach that magic number for herd immunity prevention. So what happens if you develop a child develop one of these disorders? Well, they develop a nice little bureaucracy to make sure nothing happens. Well, first you got to go through the Congress, then you got to go through Centers for Disease Control, then we have an advisory committee, and on and on and on and on. And then you can record all these terrible things in the vaccine adverse event reporting system, VAERS, and then nothing happens. And so you go back, bring your next child up here, and go through this mess again. Well, the best way to keep people from doing anything is create a massive bureaucracy they have to go through, and then most people get frustrated and quit. Oh, absolutely. They could die anywhere along that chart from the very beginning. And all that happens is they put it in a sheet in a file cabinet and hide it. I mean, the VAERS information, that's the vaccine events data, had collected hundreds of thousands of reactions. You know what they did with that data for all these years? It sat in a file cabinet. Not one researcher, not anyone looked at it. The Geyers, which are doctors and geneticists, wanted to look at it. And they used to work for the CDC. And said, we want to evaluate this data and see if there's a connection between vaccines and autism. They wouldn't let them look at it. So no, this is protected information. They had to file a lawsuit against the government, Freedom of Information, to get the data released so that they could look at it, and they found, yes, there's a connection between vaccines and autism.
When?
Yes. This is about 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
I'm surprised they honored the FOIA.
Five what?
I'm surprised that they honored the FOIA.
Well, it got so much publicity, they were forced to do it.
But then it was very restricted.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's all...
And then they ruined their name.
Yeah, they put it in a journal that they know most people are not going to read. And then they have an army of people out there, you know, in high position who will say they're crazy. This is what they did to Andrew Wakefield. Mm-hmm. Andrew Wakefield was a researcher who showed that measles causes terrible intestinal infection and a connection possibly to autism. And he was a very highly regarded research scientist. He proved it every way you could prove it with pristine effect. And they just destroyed him. The media just came down on him like he was some charlatan riding a wagon selling snake oil. Andrew Wakefield. They do this to everyone because they have an army of people in Harvard, Johns Hopkins, UCLA, who are on the payroll, who will be glad to destroy the reputation of anybody who disagrees, because there's a lot of money behind it. Billions. All right,
how many people did you know in your time with the four vaccinations that you received? How many people that you knew had autism? None.
Oh, none. Well, you see, like I said, before then, the autism rate was flat.
Yeah.
It was a rare disease. Never changed. It's a different disease than what we're seeing now. Neurologically, it's different. Neuroanatomically, it's different. So this new explosion is a different disease. Now, this is a book. This is my last slide. Vaccine Safety Manual, which I wrote the foreword to. Great book. A lot of these slides were taken from it. And I would suggest get it. It's written for families. You know, it's not a high technical book, but it's got enough technical stuff in there that you can really get your teeth into it. It's the best thing ever written. Vaccine Safety Manual by Neil Miller. He was the one to first show the history of vaccination and all of these diseases falling before there was any vaccine. So we'll do what we used to do in the old movies. You know.
So could the vaccinated kids get the unvaccinated kids?
Yeah, they see, this is the problem with vaccinating kids also, is that because they're immune suppressed, they carry a lot of viruses, mycobacteria and bacteria. So then when your child is playing with them or in the daycare center, they get infected. You see, and that's why daycare centers is the leading cause of HIV. Most cases come out of daycare centers because it was kids with vaccinated a zillion times. They're immune suppressed. Some of them don't have good nutrition. And they spread it all over.
Can you recommend a family practice doctor in Jackson?
I don't know a soul. And, you know, the thing is, there are pediatricians who agree with all of this. They're scared to speak out. Because if they do, they risk losing their license, risk losing their patients, ostracized by their fellows. And that is very, very powerful. So there's people out there that agree. There's good doctors who agree. There's doctors who would love to speak out, but they're scared.
But that doesn't help my child.
So. No.
No, but there are pediatricians that will let you spread out the vaccines.
Yeah.
Don't give six in one day. All those things. And you have that power. And
if they shouldn't be any closer than 6 months. If you don't want to give any, you shouldn't have to, but the state makes
it. Don't ask, don't tell.
And you can
Yeah,
my pediatrician
for you, he won't make you vaccinated. Yeah, my pediatrician, of course, mine was heard of by lots of them,
Dr. Blaylock. Have they found
something that deactivates the microglia? Yeah.
What is it?
Well, actually, there's quite a few things that will. For instance, resveratrol, which is an extract from grape skin. Powerfully inhibits microglial activation. Carnosine powerfully inhibits microglial activation. And they did try carnosine in autistic kids and got a good response. It also suppresses seizures. Curcumin, quercetin, fish oil, DHA in particular. DHA is a powerful inhibitor of microglial activation. A substance called ferulic acid, which you get extracted from fruits. You can buy it as a supplement. Ferulic acid suppresses microglial activation.
Spell that.
F-E-R-U-L-I-C.
Can you give this to children?
Huh? Well, you'd have to use a reduced dose. But by mixing these things, you reduce it. Now, one of the theories I'm working on now is that what may make certain children highly susceptible is vitamin D deficient. Vitamin D is a immune modulating vitamin. It's really a neural hormone. It's not a vitamin. Now, D3 is a functional form of vitamin D. It keeps immune overactivation from occurring. And when they use it in things like experimental allergic encephalomyelitis, which imitates multiple sclerosis, it will halt it. If you give it before, they won't get it. If you give it while the disease is in its rampant form, it'll stop it. It won't progress any further. Now, what happens is most people are not getting enough vitamin D3. And the new recommendations is everybody should get vitamin D3 and 2,000 units a day. We fall far short of that because the geniuses have said, well, you should get 200 units. And they just say vitamin D. They don't specify D3. You can buy vitamin D3.
Are there any tests that we can do to test the presence of vaccination in people that's not vaccinated right now? We want to go take a test and see if there's any trace of the mercury in our body.
Yeah, you can get tested for the mercury. For babies, you can get hair tests. But a lot of times the mercury will not end up in the hair. There's some theory that they can't excrete it into the hair. In that case, you have to use chelation.
Yes, that's
right. Yeah, and the chelation DMSA, which binds the mercury, drains it out into urine, and you can test the urine. DMSA does not remove it from the brain very well. But one of the ways to reduce mercury toxicity is selenium. It is a powerful neutralizer of brain mercury toxicity. And also, selenium protects the brain against excitable toxicity.
Another culprit of mercury is also the
amalgam.
And the state of Mississippi, I find that a lot of dentists are still giving it to children. The parent does not advocate not getting it, that parent's child will get it.
Well, also, the fact that the amalgam mercury stays in your body for years, decades. So if a young girl gets dental fillings with amalgam, and then 10 years later she gets pregnant, she's secreting mercury into her baby.
Dr. Blaylock.
And mercury concentrates on the baby's side of the placenta, meaning the baby's level is higher than the mother's. So what we see is most children are exposed to multiple sites. It's in the atmosphere. The South has the highest mercury level around. West Texas has enormous atmospheric mercury. Can you remember the report where they showed West Texas has enormous autism rate? You get it from fish. You get it from dental amalgam. You get it from vaccines. You get it from foods. So there's a lot of sources. Now, the women who have the most of those combined at the highest risk of autism or other problems.
Direct
gamma.
Direct gamma.
Yeah, but they kind of cleaned up a lot of those. But what I wanted to say about the amalgams is that, like, within the last couple of months, some parents and organizations finally filed suit against FDA and made them. They won. They made them change the FDA page. It says mercury is toxic, and so you have to give informed consent now when you go to the dentist. Now,
well,
that should have been done long ago.
Is worse than the medical
profession. Yeah, absolutely. But I mean,
in California,
they won something.
Well, in California, there was a law on the books that dentists have to post in their office that mercury is a neurotoxin to the developing brain, and they were supposed to warn every woman that comes in their office about this danger. They refused to do it. They did not do it. They violated the law. And then the dentist who posted it, they threw him out of the dental society. So the dentists that were following the law were thrown out of the dental society. If a dentist refused to put mercury in teeth, he was thrown out of the dental society.
This has all been great information to me, and I just don't really know exactly where to go, though, from here. I don't really know what your recommendation is. I mean, we don't have any child with the situation. I hear all these families, and I want to educate myself to prevent myself from having many of these people's stories. But I just don't really know what the... Okay, so what
well, number one, in vitamin D3, a multivitamin during pregnancy. Vitamins while you're breastfeeding. Be sure to breastfeed your child. Be sure to supplement with DHA.
Okay, as far as immunizations go, though.
And, well, this is important even if they force immunization.
Oh, so you're saying...
Because this will dramatically reduce...
So we shouldn't walk in tomorrow with our one-year-old child checkup we've got tomorrow, and they want to give them 6 shots tomorrow.
You say no.
No.
Say no.
That's what I'm trying to say. I don't know where to go from here.
Well, you know where to go because I told you what happens when you get 6 shots. And there's no reason to give 6 shots.
And then what happens when you...
He may get red in the face, jump up and down, and leap out the window. But who cares? It's your child.
So then, do I now say? I mean, does that mean my child can't go anywhere to school? Like, am I going to have
one? No, you're not refusing the vaccine. You're saying, I do not want any multiple vaccines. I want them separated by 6 months, and I don't want these vaccines that are not mandated by law. If it's just your crazy recommendation, I don't know.
I'm confused, but I'm trying to understand the steps to take to prevent the story.
Well, that's the step. Good nutrition.
Okay.
Tell your pediatrician, no, I don't want it.
Okay.
I want them separated. I want them 6 months apart.
Okay.
I don't want the vaccines that are not by law mandated.
Right.
And until we can get rid of it.
And those are things support the legislation effort.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. You got to support it, but for you right now,
right.
That's the thing to do.
Here, we want to know.
And see, the only reason the pediatrician gets 6 vaccines, 9 vaccines at once is this.
It's
because the American Academy of Pediatrics put out a notice that it is perfectly safe. And you say, I know it's not safe. I do not want it. And he said, well, man, I don't want to hear that. I just want it one at a time. I'm crazy. Do what I say. I'm paying your bill.
I have done that. Just
you have to remind them, I'm paying your bill. You work for me. I don't work for you. Patients get intimidated by their doctor and they think the doctor owns them. You're paying this guy.
We
got to
go.
Yeah.
You're locking the door. He's
locking the door. No. Most of my neurology colleagues, if I talk about excitotoxicity, they know what I'm talking about. Oh, they've heard about it. That's about it. That's what I was saying. Most doctors don't know these things. I know them because I get deep in the loop. I study this intensely. Doctors don't do that. Most of them.
I'm going to have to close up in just a minute. Quick question, Chris.
I want to know what exactly, what ones are mandated by law, and also, as you know, my daughter tried to go and have them spread out, and they said that if she did that, the state would not cover her insurance-wise for that baby at all. She can take her baby and get them spread out for health center, but she will lose her insurance for that child.
Well,
Medicaid, my son's not Medicaid, he's never had anything, he didn't even decide to be paid shot. He got Medicaid. The only time we didn't lose Medicaid until his dad's friend left us. Never heard of it. Then I hit him in the health department.
Go ahead. Okay.
But he's never had any book or a DVD or
you can go to the state website and look at the state mandate and back
pain. Dr. Lynn, thanks, sir.
Thank you.
Oh, information is all over the internet. Get that book.
Let me give you one.
If you have please things on your table, just leave them there. We'll clean them up for you because they want to recycle them. And also, I just want to we have a little gift for Dr. Whitelock. Thank you so much. Can everyone give him a big round of applause? Thank you.